This podcast is brought to you by the Self-Publishing Formula's Facebook Ads for Authors premium course. Registration opens on the 3rd of June for a limited time. To join the waiting list and to get a free masterclass on using Facebook ads to increase your author mailing list, visit selfpublishingformula.com. Hello, and welcome to podcast number 11 from the Self-Publishing Formula.
Two writers, one just starting out, the other a bestseller. Join James Blatch and Mark Dawson and their amazing guests as they discuss how you can make a living telling stories. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Yes, we're here in, we can say for once, sunny United Kingdom, can't we, Mark?
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's like 20 degrees outside, so I'm going to go for a walk after this. Beautiful.
20 whole degrees. That's something something to celebrate in the UK. Yes, we are going to talk specifically and with authority and detail about the subject of mailing lists. Mailing lists are so fundamental, not just to modern authors in the self-publishing zone, but actually to pretty much every digital business. Any business online will very much revolve around a mailing list in this day and age, and understanding the fundamentals of it, the role it plays in your business. And what I'm really hoping to get out of this, Mark, is some real actionable points about how to set one up, how to go about building it up, because I, as you know, I haven't established mine yet. So that is something that's looming for me shortly.
Yeah, we could definitely focus on that. I mean, it is very important for newbie writers, but equally as important for kind of older hands. And hopefully we can put some slightly higher level advanced strategies in place as well to cover all of the listenership.
Okay, but before we get into that discussion, we have something very special to announce. You will remember when we launched the podcast, we had a competition to try and get the podcast shared. And it was a competition that rewarded you the more you shared it. And that's run its course now. Thank you very much to everybody who took part, everybody who shared the podcast, not just for the competition. We know it's getting lots of shares and some chat online. That's brilliant. It's very heartening for us. But there is a winner from that competition. And Mark Dawson, would you like to announce the winner?
Yes, the winner is Jules Dixon, who I think writes saucy romances.
Saucy romances is a pretty good genre to be writing in. So Jules, you have won access to Mark Dawson's Facebook Ads for Authors, which is his detailed premium course, highly acclaimed course, lots of testimony on how brilliant it's been for authors. In addition to the main course, which is worth about $700 by itself, you get a module on Twitter advertising. We've got YouTube advertising coming up, and there will be lots of bonuses as well. So Jules, all that for free. I will be emailing you in the next day or two, probably even before you've listened to this podcast. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm going to hold off emailing for a week because it'll be a surprise for Jules, won't it, to listen to the podcast and hear her announced rather than get an email from me. I'm going to do that. And then we will sort you out with access to the course. Well, that was exciting, having a competition. We should do another competition at some point, Mark, shouldn't we? We'll think of another great giveaway.
We'll rack our brains. I'm sure we can come up with something.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to talk about the meat in our subject. So no interview this week. This is going to be a detailed discussion on an area of value and actionable insights for self-publishing authors. And as I said, it's the mailing list. So we've given a bit of an introduction to the mailing list, but let's get into a little bit more detail about the role they play in the life, the marketing life of an author. Mark, and I think we've said this before, we mention it quite a lot because it's quite an important part of your process, that you regretted not having a mailing list set up earlier for the very obvious reason that you were selling books to people and that was it. That was the end of your relationship with them.
Yeah, I was a bit late to the party. We've gone through the story a few times, so I won't go into full detail again, but I had a few kind of free runs back in the day when I was getting tens of thousands of free downloads off the back of ads with people like Freebooksy. And I only had one or maybe two books out then. And once people had bought the books and read them or downloaded them and read them, they didn't have anywhere else to go. There was no second book to buy if they liked the first one. And there was no way for them to get in contact with me to give me their email address so I could then communicate with them down the line and tell them when I had something else to put out. So it was definitely a bit of a false start. And I probably retarded my career by 6 months or so by just not doing it properly.
Okay, so you do have one now. You got one set up in those early days. And what difference has it made to your selling career?
I mean, fundamental, absolutely fundamental. It's the most important thing. My most valuable asset in my business is my mailing list. Actually, we should probably open it out a little bit and say that we've got a mailing list for self-publishing formula as well. So, you know, it's as you said earlier, it's essential for any kind of digital business these days, be that selling books or selling courses. But yeah, when I started for the books, I mean, I tracked this when I was doing some slides for some webinars that I was doing last year, and you could track fairly accurately. You could see the growth in my mailing list corresponding with growth of sales and income. It's not coincidental that they're definitely linked in lots of different ways that we'll get into as we dig in.
There are a few experts who are very eloquent about talking about mailing lists and the power of them. Pat Flynn, we've had on this podcast in the past, and he's certainly a good place to go to. But as always with SPF, ours is very focused on self-publishing authors. And so we're going to really get to how you should be operating a mailing list, or at least our advice on that area ourselves. So you've talked about owning your audience. You've talked about the difference and impact that it's made on the way that you've operated. And let me just ask you a question about emailing, because there are so many different forms of communication now. And I've noticed, I'm involved in a few organizations where I live, and I've noticed that the younger people seem to like things like WhatsApp and text. And I'm hearing that email is not as preferred as it used to be. But do you think it is still something that is a good way of communicating?
Yeah, I think all of that kind of talk is overblown, to be honest. I think it's still the most, I'm absolutely sure it's the most effective way to connect with potential customers. It's still, an email address is something that's still fairly jealously guarded. It's not something that people give out willy-nilly these days. And there's a reason for that. It's kind of imbued with a particular kind of weightiness, rather than the transience of kind of a WhatsApp message, something along those lines. People do not give away those email addresses easily, because it's very personal. It's something that's coming into, say, onto their phone directly, onto their PC. You know, it's something that tends to attract attention. All the data that I've seen, all the data and the tests that I've run, indicates that email is still much more effective than, say, Facebook, Twitter, all of the kind of social media communication channels that are available to us now. Email still beats all of them.
And they can be quite rich in content, so you can have a very nicely laid out email, and we'll talk in more detail shortly about the various platforms you can use to do that. But a well laid out email, and you do good ones, I think. I think we do as SPF as well. They do look good, and they give a sense of strengthening who you are, your brand, I suppose.
Yeah, you can certainly brand emails. I mean, I don't go too big on using all the bells and whistles as something that MailChimp enables you to do. And partly that's because I'm not the best designer in the world. And of course, I could hire someone to do that for me. But mostly because I want them to look professional. But the main the most important thing for me is that they're written in a way that enables my readers to feel a connection with me. So I'll write them very conversationally. I'll talk to them as if, this is a pretty good tip, just, you know, when you're writing these kinds of emails, just imagine that you're having a conversation with someone that you've known for years. So I will drop in information or news about new books, perhaps books I'm writing. I might, you know, it's a nice day today. You could start an email by saying, I've just been for a walk, or I've been for a run. It's beautiful weather, puts me in a good mood. Here's some more good news, got a new book out next week, something along those lines. But that kind of conversational tone is really important. It shouldn't be dressed up in business language. It shouldn't be cold. It needs to be open and friendly.
Okay. And in terms of workload, if people haven't got into this yet and aren't quite sure how the system works, I can imagine people thinking that there's huge amounts of work goes into sitting down and writing an email every month and so on. Actually, quite a lot of the system can be automated. I mean, the creation of the email is a very personal thing, needs to be done, but only needs to be done once. And you can have that same initial sequence of emails going out to each person who joins your list for the first time.
Yeah, we need to break down what the kinds of communications that come out into two kind of main camps. So on the one hand, there's automated emails, which is what you've just described. And you're absolutely right. There's a bit of kind of work up at the front to write those emails, get them loaded into your email service provider, and to check that they're serving properly. But that doesn't necessarily need to take up a huge amount of time. The other kind of email is what you'd call a broadcast or a campaign email. So if for me, for example, I've got a book out on the 20th of May, so in 2 or 3 weeks time from the time when we're recording this, and I'll draft a couple of emails, maybe three emails, that will go out in the week to 10 days of that book's launch. And those will be original emails that will only be used once, but they're probably more important than the automated emails, because they're launching a book, or they're asking for reviews, or all that kind of thing. And I get the most bang for my buck when it's writing those kinds of emails.
And as you say, another powerful aspect of the mailing list is recruiting people to help you launch your book, and recruiting advanced reader teams and so on. I mean, it's your audience, and they are surprisingly, well, perhaps not surprisingly, but pleasantly surprisingly happy to please you and happy to work alongside you and getting your books noticed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right in the middle of that process at the moment. So we're going to do a podcast on launching probably for the next 2 or 3 weeks. We'll go into it in a lot of detail with kind of audio diaries with me explaining each step along the process of actually launching this book. But right now, the process I'm in is I've got the manuscript's been proofread. So not copy edited yet, it's been proofread to make sure most of the irritating errors have gone. I then send that out to my launch team or my advanced team, and they're in the process of reading it now. I've had probably 20 emails back in the last 2 days, and they've only had it for 3 days. So 20 people coming back saying that generally they've enjoyed it. A couple saying they didn't like it as much as previous ones, which is totally fine, of course. And making suggestions. I mean, this is quite fun. One question that I needed to get answered before this book goes out is there's a scene at the end of the book where my hero, Milton, needs to create a really big explosion. And it's kind of a slightly MacGyverish. So he's locked in a... he's kind of in a room and he needs to create an explosion with the ingredients that he's got with him.
Now, our past as BBFC examiners, film examiners, will come into play here, because we spent a lot of time looking at MacGyver and people making explosions and trying to work out whether that was a real world risk if we released the video.
Exactly. So a lot of that has informed me, and I've come up with an idea, and I think it works, but I'm not, beyond what I can find on the internet, I'm not particularly skilled in that kind of thing. So what I've done is, in the email that went out to the advanced team, I've asked them specifically to focus on that one chapter, and I've had 4 or 5 responses from people who work in that kind of industry, gas safety, that kind of thing, which is amazing. And they've said, generally, yes, this would work, but your fuse method would be too dangerous. This is how I would create a fuse for this kind of explosion, which is fantastic. I could probably find that out on the internet, but it's quite hard to know what you're searching for sometimes when you don't know what the answer is. So they've come back with some really golden tips that will make the book much, much stronger when it's finally released.
It also gives you a very dodgy internet search history if you spend a lot of time.
I've finished on that score. When I went to America a couple of weeks ago, a couple of months ago, I was legitimately concerned that I wouldn't get through. I wouldn't get through immigration at the other side, because the NSA must know that I've given the books I write. I do search for some quite worrying things. So I was quite concerned that I'd be taken aside, but it didn't happen, thankfully.
Good. Okay, before we move on to some of the nitty-gritty, I'm going to start by asking you how you initially set up your mailing list and how that's evolved for you personally, and then we'll talk about some of the options available now. I just want to talk about tone of writing a little bit, and the reason for that is that it's very, very important. One of our previous guests, Marie Force, talks a lot about how she talks to her audience. I've joined a few authors' mailing lists since we've been in this venture, in the self-publishing formula venture, and they do vary. And I've noticed one in particular, and another one to an extent as well. The authors have quite an underconfident tone, and they sort of talk about, I'm sorry to be an imposition on you today, but, you know, maybe you probably won't like this. And I think they need to be more confident. I think they need to understand that the reason I've joined their list is because I really like their books, and I want them to be confident about it, say, look, I'm really excited about my next book, and this is what it's going to be like, rather than, and I think it's natural, I think it's writers, lots of writers are underconfident, and I put myself there as well, but I think your tone is confident, and I think that's how you need to be.
I wasn't always confident, and I understand where this lack of confidence comes from. I think it's because, even though people have, as you say, they've subscribed, they've wanted to be on the list, people do still get a bit nervous about sending something that seems as if it's a little bit unsolicited, especially if you have an email for 2 or 3 months and then you're sending this email out. And the reason people are worried about that is because they're very concerned that they're going to get unsubscribes and abuse reports. Because if you get enough of those on something like MailChimp, and the threshold is reasonably low, if you get enough of those, then you can have your account suspended, which would be, you know, that's a bad thing. So I think there is that kind of slight nervousness in tone, but kind of perversely, the fact that you're writing emails that way, I think, makes it more likely that you're going to turn people off and they're going to unsubscribe anyway, or they'd be more likely to do it. So it's important to diagnose that as a problem. And then it's important to get around it, be confident, remember that they're on the list because they like your books. They want to hear about your writing process or when you've got a new book out. You know, and there's a reason why, if you look on MailChimp, the final moment before you press send, first of all, you have to press it twice to kind of double confirm you want to send it. There's that kind of sweaty monkey that
is high five monkey.
The sweaty high five monkey.
Oh yeah, the monkey's sweating, isn't it? Yeah, because
there's a reason. Yeah, there's a reason why that monkey is sweating, because MailChimp is acknowledging that it can be a big thing to send an email out to 20,000 people and to be concerned that they're all going to hate it. So there you go. That's a pretty, that's a good indication that this isn't something that's specific to writers. It's something that is general, but you know, you can get over it. It's not something that bothers me too much these days. And it's just a little bit of confidence. Once you've sent a few emails and you're not being deluged with unsubscribes, it's something you can get over.
Yeah. Be confident, sell yourself, and make it feel like what it is, which is part of a community based around your books, which is an amazing thing. Okay, let's move on to some of the detail then. And let me take you back all those years ago, months ago, really, when you started your first list. How did you go about it?
Well, okay, so I'll be completely honest about how awful I did this to start with. I realized reasonably soon after that mistake that I needed to correct that. So I'd probably been listening to a few podcasts, reading threads on K-boards, and kind of the penny dropped. I needed to get a mailing list. So what I did, because I'm cheap, was to put my email address in the back of the book. So my normal email address people can get to me on, I'd put that into the back of the book and then encourage people, if they wanted to be on a list or to get news from me, I'd say, just email me and I'll take care of it. So people would email into my normal inbox. I would then cut and paste their email addresses and put them onto an Excel spreadsheet. And then when I had something to sell or to tell them about, open up my normal email program and cut and paste all those emails, put them into the BCC field and then send them out that way, which is wrong on about 100 million different levels. Apart from the fact that it's a miracle that my email account hasn't been shut down for you know, suspicious spam behavior by the provider. It's just a stupid idea. It takes ages and ages and ages. It's massively time intensive. Just generally a bad idea all around. So I did that for about 6 months. And then I thought, okay, let's look at doing this a bit more professionally. So I looked at the options. So there are plenty of beginner options out there. MailChimp is the big player. So very, very well known. They sponsor lots of big podcasts. I mean, they sponsor Serial, for example. They're all over the place. I think they must have millions of subscribers now. So that's certainly the biggest, most reliable platform. So the other option is AWeber. I mean, pretty similar to MailChimp in terms of its feature suite. And they both offer that free level up to 2,000 subscribers. You don't have to pay anything. You don't get full automation for that price, but you can get around that with a couple of clever hacks. But I looked at them both. I went for MailChimp.
Is there a reason for that?
I felt it's a little bit more user-friendly. At least its interface is a bit cleaner. It looked a bit easier to me. I think AWeber is fine. I know plenty of people who use AWeber and swear by it, but for me, MailChimp was the easier of the two choices. So
okay,
I set that up and replaced the email address in the back of my books with the MailChimp landing page that is presented to you when you open a new MailChimp list. And I started to get people in that way and immediately made it a lot more straightforward for me, a lot less cutting and pasting, for one thing. Because that was another thing. When I was getting email addresses in exchange for a free book to sign up, I was emailing them individually, cutting and pasting a kind of a pro forma email, sticking it into my email system, and then pasting the books on. It's just ridiculous.
That was your automation system to physically take email addresses. I was wondering how you did it, because obviously once you've added them to your list in a totally manual environment, everyone gets every email, but you were filling up a block of the send column.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Wow, yeah, that was really laborious.
Really, and stupid. I got out of that as soon as I could. But MailChimp takes a lot of that off your plate. So it will maintain the list for you. It will present it in a fashion that's easy for you to interrogate. You can get all kinds of different information. You can see how active the subscribers are. So are they opening the emails? Are they clicking on links? Plenty of useful information that you're able to dig into. So
yeah, and a couple of things I just add from a beginner, total beginner point of view on MailChimp, because I've come to it much later than you have. The first thing I say to people, I've recently got my local cricket club using MailChimp because they were doing what you were doing, and it was silly. And actually, we did get emails blocked by the service provider, who quite rightly thought it looked like spam. So I've got them using MailChimp, and I had people who aren't very technical looking at it, and they couldn't get started until I said to them, lists and campaigns are separate in MailChimp. So you get your lists on one side, and you can have different lists for full of email addresses. And then you set up a campaign and then you link the two. You tell we want to send it to that list. And actually, although it sounds very intuitive when you start using it, that's not intuitive at the beginning. And people were going into the campaign and they wouldn't even start creating their email because they couldn't see who they were sending it to and they didn't understand it. So once I explained that, so that's a good real beginner tip, MailChimp. Lists are one thing, campaigns are another, and you link them together at the end of the campaign creation. And the second thing about MailChimp is there's a good little hack in there, which is to keep it free without automation. You do get the option, and it's a sort of tick box when you set up the list, is to send a welcome email, which at the beginning of the process, when people opt in, there is automatically a system which forces them to confirm that they want to join the list, which is quite right. It's a part of the data protection and the etiquette of email lists. But you have an option within MailChimp to send a welcome email, which you can construct. Now, actually, if you're a new author, that could be the email that delivers the book. So if you've got a landing page and you're giving away your book and people join your mailing list, that part of it at least could be automated. So this welcome email will go out, and that is still free of charge within MailChimp. So that's a really useful aspect of it. I'm not sure whether AWeber has the same hack in it. It may well do. I don't know, but MailChimp certainly does.
Yeah, I don't know that one either. But yeah, and that's something that I do. So the first email people get is the confirmation email, and that has the first of the books that I give away. And it's quite useful to do that, to get your emails whitelisted. So in other words, going into the right inbox and not going into spam or promotions if you're on Gmail. Getting the recipient to actually do something on the email indicates to Google, for example, that it's something that they wanted to receive. So having something early on that they click on, so the free book, will make it more likely that your future emails get through to them.
Let's flesh out the opt-in side of it. There's an opt-in and something called a double opt-in. Can you explain that to me?
Yep, some email services will allow you to recruit or get new subscribers who just basically only have to click once. So it might be that they see a landing page on your site, they put their email address in, they click, and they're opted in. In other words, they're included on your relevant list from that stage. So the alternative is double opt-in. So they'll go through that landing page process and they'll enter their email address, click they want to join, and then they'll receive an email from MailChimp saying, if you want to be on this list, just click this link and you will be opted in. You know, as you say, it's kind of more, it's slight, I wouldn't say single opt-in is frowned upon, because that wouldn't be right, but it's certainly more convenient to have single opt-in, and you'll find that you'll get more people subscribing, because it does happen quite a lot that those double opt-in emails don't get opened, or they get lost, they're not delivered properly, and so people who wanted to join don't get the chance to join. But on the other hand, double opt-in means that they're more qualified, so you know that they're less likely to be spammy. There certainly won't be spam bots. It will be someone who has indicated twice that they want to join, which suggests is good evidence, certainly better evidence that they're going to be engaged subscribers than people who just click the once.
And MailChimp, for instance, is a double opt-in system, yeah?
Generally, yeah. It is at the kind of the level that we'll be looking at. So signups in the backs of books, that will require double opt-in. If you import people into your lists, that can effectively be single opt-in, because you just, you know, if you've got a list of emails and you put them in, or you put them in individually, you don't need to double opt-in those.
In fact, I think that, you know, technically that stage is you ticking a box saying that they are happy, yes, to be on your list, so you've done it for
correct
them. Okay, yeah. We're going to come back, I think, just briefly to Infusionsoft and ConvertKit and the more advanced systems in a moment. But let's just press on at the beginner level, or the sort of early level for authors, and stick with MailChimp and AWeber. In terms of how you would then operate the platform, in terms of lists, for instance, would you have just one list with everybody on it?
No, I don't. I've got about 10 different lists, but perhaps a bit more than 10 now. And each of those is linked to one sign up, which goes into one book. So, for example, the first Milton book is called The Cleaner. There'll be a list called The Cleaner in MailChimp. And the only people on that list are people who've seen the link at the back of that book and have clicked on it to join. So there are ways around that. You can do what's called segmentation and creating groups, but I don't think MailChimp does that very well. And I prefer just to be a little bit more basic on this. But the benefit of doing it that way is if people come into the cleaner list, I know that that's the book that they've read. So the first automated email they'll get is one advertising the second book in the series, The Saint Death. And conversely, if they join the Saint Death list, they'll know that that's probably the first book they've read, and I might offer them the first book to get them up to speed on the book that went before it. So it does enable you to know that information of when they joined or what they did before they joined. Enables you to be slightly more bespoke when it comes to your email marketing going forwards.
Can people not end up on more than one list that way, though?
That is possible, and it does happen, but it's not a disaster. You could, if you wanted to, try and prune those down. I mean, it's a bit of a bind. You'd have to search them, find out if they appeared on more than one list, and delete them off the duplicate ones. I would say don't worry too much about that. If people are in more than once, the odds are they'll unsubscribe from one of them and do it for you. You know, again, don't be worried about unsubscribes. It's not disastrous, and it just helps you to keep things cleaner. Something like, you know, ConvertKit or Infusionsoft has more powerful features that means that doesn't happen. But at the basic level, I wouldn't worry too much about that with MailChimp.
Okay, so separate lists, which basically are different journeys that readers have taken, different ways that they've got onto your list, and that enables you to manage their experience with you in the future. That's a good tip and a trick. In MailChimp and the others, you get quite a lot of information, actually an amazing amount of information, on who's opened what and who's clicked on what. And that's obviously a very important part of how you make changes going forward.
Yes, I mean, a kind of a practical example that I sent out about an hour ago. We mentioned the contest for the SPF right at the start of the podcast. So we had about 700 entries for that competition. And so we got a download of a spreadsheet of the people who had entered. I put those into a new MailChimp list, which I called something like Podcast Launch Competition. And then, because they had only given us their email addresses as part of the competition, I'm not going to drop those straight into a normal SPF mailing list. It's bad etiquette to do that. It's rude. They didn't ask to be on that list. But at the same time, they might want to be on it. So I just sent out an email to them saying, you know, that the competition has been drawn, the winner's been drawn. But if they wanted to stay on our list and get the kind of the free marketing stuff that we, you know, prepared, the videos we've done and all that kind of stuff, all they needed to do was to click a link that then took them to the self-publishing formula website. And all I need to do after that is to pull out a report that says these people have clicked that link. I can then pull their addresses and then put them into the main SPF list. So it's a kind of another way of doing a double opt-in, just a way to, they don't need to email and tell me they want to be in. Just clicking is enough. And that makes it very easy for me then to just put them into the main list.
And likewise, if you sent an email out, for instance, you're an author and you've got a giveaway, a PDF giveaway. I think you've done something like this in the past, Mark. You've created sort of an MI6 document or something for somebody. So this is a bit of a bonus. When you look at that a week or so after the email's gone out, or a couple of days after the email's gone out, you can see how many people have clicked on it. And if you're getting very low click rates, that gives you an indication that maybe the email wasn't constructed very well, or the idea is not very good, or maybe the subject heading was misleading. I mean, this is important information, isn't it, for optimizing going forward?
That's the kind of stuff you need, especially in the early days when you're starting to feel this kind of thing out. It's important to look at those reports that are provided to you. analyze what's working, what isn't working. So the next time you've got something to send out, you can tweak it and make it more clickable or more attractive, whatever needs to be done, just you can improve the email.
That's one example, by the way, of something you could do. So depending on what genre your book's in, you could be a romance author and you know that people have read your first book and you're trying to get them to read more, or you'd like them to be more engaged. But you could create a letter from one character to another that doesn't appear in the book. It's a bit of background information, refers to something that happened, you know, maybe 5 years before your story. What a lovely little thing for somebody who's enjoyed the book to then have. That's just one idea. And I know you're quite good at thinking about these things, a little bit of value-added material. Think of it, I suppose, as like getting a DVD and looking at the extras.
Yeah, that's right. And an author called Chris Fox, who will be well known to some listeners of the podcast, he's done something pretty good with his new book. And he's created, I think it's a very small novella, but it addresses some questions that he deliberately left unanswered in his main story, in the novel. And he said, look, if you want to know the background or, you know, you want to get answers to these questions, the only way you'll be able to do that is by downloading this free story. And he's getting a very high conversion percentage of people who've just finished the book and really want to know the information that he's offering. So that he's certainly right. It's very clever. Just think outside the box. You can come up with some really cool ideas that will get people clicking.
And this does enable a whole new type of communication with readers, or a relationship between authors and readers. I mean, I know when I get to the end of a book I really like, I read everything on it. I go on and read reviews. I read the sleeve notes. I read the biog about the author. And that's pretty much it. Usually it's despairingly little that you can read about something. You just, in that bereft feeling when you just have to put the book down and move on. But I love this new era where you might get an email from the author with a bit of extra stuff about the book. So think about it in that way. Think about the opportunity of making it a more enjoyable experience for your readers. And again, going back to what I said earlier, don't be underconfident about it. They're on your list because they want to hear from you and they want to hear more about your books.
That's the main benefit of having an email list is it enables the two-way communication between author and reader. And if you do it properly, the trick is to turn those people from readers customers to readers, then make them fans and then make them friends. And there are ways to do that. I mean, just being a normal person is a pretty good way to start. And, you know, I still answer all of the emails I get, and I get quite a few now. And it's not a chore. It's a real pleasure to get those emails and to get the chance to interact with my readers that way. And I know that every time I do that and give someone an interaction that they appreciate and remember, it makes it much, much more likely that they'll buy another book by me, or they'll buy the new book when it's ready to go. And more likely that they'll tell their friends, and that their friends will tell their friends. And before you know it, you've created new readers just from the pretty simple step, sensible, common sense step of just replying and being pleasant. It's not rocket science.
Yeah, and I think that when you're starting out and you get your first two or three new readers who are genuinely new readers, not your auntie and second cousin, that's an exciting period. And the way that you write to them, and you've got this tiny little community you're thrilled that are reading your books, the way that you write to them, as you grow and you get to the point where, Mark, I think you're talking about 40,000 plus on your list now, but you write to people in the same way that you wrote to them when it was 50 of them, and it was just a small group. And that's a really an amazing aspect of this digital world, that personal touch you can still have.
Yeah, very important actually is to just remember how it felt like. And I can remember very vividly getting the first email from MailChimp saying this person has indicated that they'd like your stuff enough to give you their email. That was really, it was one of the kind of the main steps along the journey for me. Yeah, I mean, just remember what that felt like, and remember the kind of content and the kind of tone that you put into the email when you reply to that first person, and keep doing it, because there's something, you know, it's magical. When I was growing up, Stephen King had answered one of my emails, or Martin Amis, or Bret Easton Ellis, someone like that, I'd have been doing backflips. It's easy to become a bit blasé about that, but you know, for some readers, that it is something really special to be able to correspond directly with their favourite writer like that.
Yeah, Okay, just before we move on to, I want to give, we'll talk a little bit about launching in a moment, just to sum up on that area. So you get this information back from your mail service provider, MailChimp, AWeber, or whatever, shows you how many people are clicking on links and opening, and look at that information. If you're not getting the rates of open that you want, look at how you've written the email, look at the subject heading, change headlines, and try and improve those open rates as time goes on. Use that information. And just before we leave tips and tricks, then actually we've been talking for quite a long time, so we do need to wrap this up in a moment. But before we leave the subject, you're doing your launch at the moment, and we are going to go into more detail about that in a future episode. But there are some tips and tricks you can talk about now.
Yeah, I'll just kind of throw in not so much launches, it's kind of general mailing list strategy and mindset as well. So one of the first things I'd say, and this is important, we've touched on it already, is don't be worried or scared or offended when people unsubscribe, because it's going to happen all the time. People will have subscribed to a list they didn't mean to join. They'll have forgot that they subscribed and they'll want to get off. And, you know, MailChimp can, if you want it to, email back and tell you individually as people unsubscribe. So I probably wouldn't recommend that. Just get one at the end of the day, or even don't bother. Just check when you go into MailChimp. But you mustn't be upset by that. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're annoyed with you. One thing I would say is if people want to unsubscribe, you want to make it as easy as possible for them to do that. You don't want people on your list who don't want to be there. It's not, you'll get an unhealthy list. You'll be much more likely that eventually they'll click that this is abuse or spam, and that isn't a good thing to happen. So what I do is I actually create a small section of the email in MailChimp in slightly smaller type, and I'll put it up to the top, right to the top. So it's one of the first things that people see. And I'll say something along the lines of, if you want to unsubscribe, that's totally cool. You just need to click the unsubscribe button below. And then what you do at that stage, because they click that unsubscribe button, and then MailChimp and the other platforms will present them with a list of options that they can tick that will say why they want to unsubscribe. And at least one of them, maybe even two of them, say that it's spam or I didn't sign up. And if those get ticked, that will be counted by MailChimp as abuse. And you don't want too many of those, because if you do, you do run the risk of having your account suspended. So what I do is I just kind of make it really explicit that the easiest way to unsubscribe is just to tick the box that says you don't want to receive the email anymore. And that will just count as a normal unsubscribe. And you can have many, many more of those than you can abuse reports before MailChimp steps in and takes action. So that would be that's a pretty good tip. Just to help people get off if they want to get off the list.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Mark. So final area that I want to talk about is an advanced area. So this is for people with bigger lists, and I think particularly with multi-genre series of books. In fact, you've got a bit of that going on as well, Mark. I mean, you have different types of series. Mm-hmm. So the more advanced email service providers like Infusionsoft and like ConvertKit have quite sophisticated elements to them where they can start to work out and segment people for you. So Pat Flynn talked a bit about this with ConvertKit. He's a big fan of ConvertKit. He now knows subject areas that sections of his audience are interested in. And so future campaigns can go only to them. And this doesn't need to be done in separate lists. This is more advanced, but it actually can be very powerful as your business grows.
Yeah, I mean, for him, what he does is one of the first emails you get will give you a chance to click on a link. He'll say, do you consider yourself to be, effectively beginner, medium or advanced level? And depending on what one you click, your email address is tagged as it goes into one mailing list on ConvertKit, and it will be tagged with that level of competence. And that then enables him to put you into an automated funnel that will depend upon your level of qualification. And in the future, if he wanted to do a broadcast email with a product that was for beginners, he could just send that to beginners rather than potentially waste the time of people who've already got a website. They don't need help on website creation. They've already got one. So they wouldn't see that offer, which means that he'll get less unsubscribes. It's more congruent for his audience that kind of thing. So it's very powerful, and it does have application. I mean, it has application for us in our course, but it also has an application for me and other writers as writers. So rather than having those multiple lists, which is the way I do it in MailChimp at the moment, I would be able to tag people as they came in, depending on what link they've clicked, which would be specific to one book. So instead of having 10 lists, I could have one list, but each of those email addresses would be tagged with the book that they clicked as they came in. It's a lot more elegant and less time consuming than the way I do it at the moment. So yeah. I'm looking at that, but the kind of the downside to this is that I'm so entrenched now with MailChimp, with the automation sequence, with the links that are in all of my books, there would be several days worth of work to correct all of that and kind of migrate myself over to a more powerful platform. So it's probably not something that I will be looking to do in the near future. It might be something that we do with the course.
There's a real possibility that we'll move to ConvertKit, and we'll certainly detail our story as we go along with that. I know, Pat Flynn's obviously a big guy in this area, and he likes ConvertKit. Infusionsoft does a lot of the same things. Pat and others have said they find it Confusionsoft, I think was how he
yes.
called it, can be a little bit confusing. But, my view on software is it's often the case that the one that takes a little bit longer to get into at the beginning can give you more benefit in the long run. But our minds are open on that. But if we move to ConvertKit with the course, we'll give people the benefit of our experience, certainly.
Yep, definitely.
Mark, we've got to approaching 3/4 of an hour, which is a long time for somebody to listen to you and me talking. But I think it's been useful. I can tell you from my point of view, probably the most important stuff I've picked up has been about how to write and how to approach writing and that motivational stuff. And the second most important stuff has been about the email list and how a mailing list works and why it works. And I think having that crystal clear in your mind, and even if you've been doing a mailing list for a couple of years, I hope listening to the benefit of Mark's experience, who's become very strong in this area, has been useful to you and maybe will prompt a few changes. And be confident, right?
Yeah, be confident. That's a good takeaway from this is you don't need to be worried about this. It's not technically demanding and you're just sending emails. So don't be nervous about it. Don't be apologetic, because that doesn't sell and it won't be the experience that your readers who want to be on your list, remember, it won't be the experience that they want to get from you.
Okay, great. Look, we're into May. That's why the sun is shining. But it also means that April has gone, and therefore Mark's income report is up and out, should be coinciding with the release of this podcast. So you can get Mark's income report for April. And we will be back next Friday with another podcast on the self-publishing formula. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to the Self-Publishing Formula podcast. Visit us at selfpublishingformula.com for more information, show notes, and links on today's topics. You can also sign up for our free video series on using Facebook ads to grow your mailing list. If you've enjoyed the show, please consider leaving us a review on iTunes. We'll see you next time.